Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Thanks for tuning in to the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. This is Leah Eden, and I am your host today with a special studio recording. We are in the studio today with Katrina Moore, the director of Under the Mango Tree, Food, Health, and Love in Ghana. Welcome, Katrina.
Thanks for having me, Leah.
We are super excited to have you in studio today.
I'm excited to be here.
Here in the back of Roberta's, watching all these people eat their delicious pizza. So we have brought you in today to talk about your forthcoming documentary about the Shekhinah Clinic in Ghana, as well as your very current, very live Kickstarter campaign to help you fund this great project. Before we dig into the actual project, I wanted to give our listeners a little background on who you are. Katrina has a background in theater and cooking, and she's also currently a master's candidate in the food studies program at New York University. So Under the Mango Tree is going to be your master's thesis. Tell us a little bit about how this documentary project came to be. Where'd the concept come from?
Yeah, so I'm in my fourth semester at NYU, and last summer I took a class that took me to Ghana in West Africa. The class was called Global Hunger and Food Security, and what we did was we actually went all over Ghana. We spoke with NGOs, we talked with program managers for like school feeding programs and that sort of thing. And while we went to the city of Tamale, which is in the very northern part of Ghana, in the driest, poorest region of the country, we met this man named Dr. David Abdoulaye. And he's doing this amazing thing. He runs a clinic called Shekhinah Clinic. He has just this beautiful story, and was so inspiring to all of us as a group, as a class. He grew up in the poorest region of Ghana, which is the Tamale area. And actually, all 10 of his siblings died of malnutrition-related diseases. And he is the only one that survived because he migrated to southern Ghana and worked on a farm and was able to put himself through senior high school and make it all the way through medical school with the aid of scholarships, which is just an amazing story by itself. He traveled around for a while working as a doctor. He was in Austria, he was in the UK, and then he went back to Ghana to work as a doctor there. And decided that was just not enough for him. Like, just working as a doctor was not giving back enough. So he quit his job, moved back to Tamale, where he was from, and opened a free clinic for anyone who could not afford healthcare, especially the social outcasts of the community, the mentally ill, the HIV/AIDS patients, the handicapped, you know, anybody who tends to be sort of shoved to the edges of the society and often don't have a place to live or anywhere else to go and can't afford healthcare. So it's just an amazing story.
How powerful. That must have been really, really incredible to see with your own eyes there and being able to visit him and meet the people that he worked with. Now, food insecurity and those kinds of issues, was that something that was part of your focus before you went, or was that something new to you?
It was new. We spent, with the class, we spent about 5 weeks before going to Ghana doing reading on food insecurity issues across the world, but it didn't really hit home until we actually went to Ghana and we spoke with people in the field who are doing this work and are feeding people and finding money somewhere. And it was just an amazingly inspiring trip. And now, actually, since going on that trip, food security has become a very large part of my research in the graduate program.
Right. Okay. And I want to dig a little bit deeper into what that experience was like and you know, what you plan to do next. But before that, what was your interest in documentary filmmaking before that? You know, there's been a number of food-related documentaries coming out in just the past couple years. There's been Food Inc., Soul Food Junkies, Super Size Me. You could kind of could list them for a little while. What do you think it is about that medium of film or documentary specifically that makes it so popular for sort of telling the story of food?
Yeah, it's so powerful as a medium. Because it tells the truth, or it can tell the truth. I think you have to sometimes decipher that for yourself in documentaries. But you can tell these amazing stories with documentary that you can't tell in any other way with a book or an article or even, you know, radio. You can really show people what things look like and how they move and how passionate people are about what they're doing, which is ultimately why I decided documentary was the media I needed to be working in for this, because Dr. Abdoulaye has this amazingly big smile, and he's just this silver-haired, trim, high-energy being who just runs around and doesn't seem to ever get tired. And I think people really need to see him on film. He's just such an amazingly fun, joyous personality, and that's infectious. So.
Right. No, that makes sense. But, you know, with a documentary, unlike a movie or a written piece of work, you don't really have complete control over the story or what happens in the course of filming. But, you know, you are planning to create this documentary and go to Ghana and you know, tell this story of his. What's your vision with the documentary? What kind of stories do you hope to be able to tell?
Yeah, so that is the thing about making a documentary is you don't really know what's going to happen until you get there.
A little bit of guesswork.
Yeah. So that's part of the fun and excitement of it, though, is we know the basic story. We know what they do there, but we don't know what people are going to do and say and how they're going to react. So ultimately, what I'm expecting is to tell Dr. Abdoulaye's personal story. I'm also focusing more on the food program. They feed 200 people every day with basically no resources. It's basically a Meals on Wheels program. They have one truck and they travel around the town and city of Tamale to feed whoever needs it. So we're going to get on that truck and we're going to follow them around and speak with the recipients of the food program and speak with the volunteers and watch as the food is being made. So that's ultimately the plan is to do that and film around the clinic and speak with patients and, of course, speak with Dr. Abdoulaye himself.
Right. Okay. And will you be going on your own?
No, I feel incredibly lucky that I found an incredible videographer, filmmaker named Charlie Ainsley. She is a Seattle-based photographer who has made a documentary in Ethiopia. She made one last year, and she's actually a good friend of mine. And I asked her, before I even got departmental approval for this, I asked her if she would be interested in coming to Ghana with me and filming this documentary. And she almost immediately said, yes, absolutely, I want to do this. You don't have to pay me. I want to do it. And it just happened from there. We just gathered momentum. We kept going and I got departmental approval and we started making plans. And now here we are. In July, we're going to Ghana together, just the two of us. And we're going to hire a translator. So it'll be the three of us on the production team.
Okay, very exciting. Yeah. And, you know, thinking into the future a little bit, once you've gotten to a place where you have your film, you have your footage, who would be your sort of intended audience? Like, who are the kinds of people that you really feel should see this story or need to hear this story?
Honestly, really everyone. But the ultimate goal is to use the documentary to raise funds for the clinic. The clinic is run entirely on donations. So they need constant inflow of money, and I want to use any screenings that happen with this film to just completely all the money go to Shekinah Clinic and the food program there. So I'm planning on doing screenings for anybody who wants to be there. A lot of students, I think, activist groups, people who are working in the nonprofit medical care industry. I think those are the types of people who would really connect with this story.
Right. Okay. So you've been telling us a little bit about kind of the concept of how the documentary came to be, and your hopes for the project. But I'm hoping you can tell us a little bit about the process of actually making it happen. And in a little bit, we're going to get in a little bit more depth about what you're going to see and the kinds of people. But sort of where are you in the course of the project? Give us a sense of timing and what role does this Kickstarter campaign play for you?
Yeah. So as you might know, making a documentary is a pretty big project. And I didn't think I knew how big of a project it was going to be before I committed myself to it. I just basically have decided to spend the next year learning how to do this. And I have no experience in documentary filmmaking. I did study theater in undergrad, so I do know about storytelling. I know about story structures and how to create a story with a medium like film. And where I am in the project is I'm kind of in the learning stages. I've been taking a lot of classes and reading books on editing and documentary structures. I've been watching a lot of documentaries, and I am at the same time making sure that we are ready to go in July. So what that means is that we are writing treatments, which since we don't know exactly what's going to happen, we are writing treatments and shot lists with a lot of guesswork, kind of an ideal fantasy shot list of everything we might need to capture while we're there. And of course, we do expect that to change while we're there. But the more planning you put into it before you go, the more likely it is you can roll with the punches when you're there. So that's where we are right now.
Right. Okay. So you're planning this trip for July. Mm-hmm. You and Charlie show up with your little backpacks and your film and all your equipment and everything. Give us a sense of what happens on day one. What happens on day two? Do you just grab your camera and go, or is there any kind of do you have to start creating relationships, or what happens, immediately?
Yeah, actually, that's a great question, because we were planning on leaving the cameras in the rooms while we're there the first couple of days and just immersing ourselves in the community and getting to know the people, going on the food route and talking to every single person who is a recipient of this food program, just to let them know what we're doing and why we're there and that we're not there. Mainly that we're not there to exploit them in any way, that we're there to actually help the clinic and get them more donations so that they can continue this program. I think that's the most important thing that we want to get across, is that, people in Ghana can tend to be shy about being photographed by foreigners. And we want to make sure that people know that this project is for them. It's not for us. And I think people will be more willing to participate and be more comfortable with us being there with cameras if we go in for a few days first and get to know them.
Right, that makes sense. And has Charlie been to Ghana? I know you mentioned she's been to some other really interesting places.
She has not been to Ghana. This will be her first trip there.
Oh,
she has been
exciting.
To a lot of interesting places. She's a world traveler. But she's not been to Ghana. She's really excited for her first trip there.
Right. Okay. And where else have you been? I know you've also been to some some unique countries in that region. I'm just wondering, what other travel experiences or what other places do you think you're going to be drawing from in this new experience?
Yeah, Ghana is the only country I've been to on the continent of Africa. And having been there I spent 5 weeks there last summer, and it so I feel very comfortable going back, as I know pretty much what to expect. I have also been several other places. I went to the Dominican Republic and Tobago and Trinidad last year. I've traveled all over Europe in undergrad, so I definitely have experience traveling. I love to travel. I want to always travel.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. So Katrina, how's the Kickstarter campaign going so far?
It's going better than I could have imagined. We're 6 days in as of today. So we have 24 days to go. And we have already raised 54% of our funding goal, which is great. Our funding goal is $10,000. And we've raised about a little over half of that. But we still have half to go. So we are really excited that we've made it this far this quickly. But we do need to keep pushing ahead and make sure we do reach that goal, because Kickstarter, as you may or may not know, works by if you don't get 100% or more of your goal, you don't get any of it. So we have to reach at least $10,000 in 24 days or we will not get any funding for this. And then we will not be able to do this project.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. But I'm confident that we're going to get there. I think the way it's been going so far, it looks like we're going to make it.
Right. Oh, very exciting. And so if people want to learn a little bit more about that campaign and watch what I thought was a fantastic teaser video to learn a little bit about the clinic and the goals of the project, how do people find out more about your campaign?
Well, you can just go to kickstarter.com and search Under the Mango Tree, which is the title of the project, in the little search box at the top of the page, and that'll take you right to it. You can watch the video right there. You can read about it, and there are links to Charlie's personal page. You can look at her photography, and it's beautiful stuff. I encourage you to look at that. You can also look at the Shekinah Clinic's website. They do have a website, and that's linked to on the page as well, so you can get a little bit more information about the clinic.
Oh, great. Great. We are going to take a very quick break. Thanks so much for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We've been chatting with Katrina Moore. And when we come back from break, she's going to transport us to Ghana with her stories, tell us a little bit more about how we can support her. So during the break, go to Kickstarter and check out Under the Mango Tree. You've been listening to the Heritage Radio Network, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Wake Up by Eula on heritageradionetwork.org. Speak kind words to me, or will you try to pay? I'd rather leave than try to. 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 This is Chris Howell from Cain Vineyard and Winery. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cain encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. For more information, visit cain5.com.
Welcome back. This is your host, Leah Eden, and you are listening to the heritageradionetwork.org. We're back in the studio this evening with Katrina Moore, the director of Under the Mango Tree, Food, Health, and Love in Ghana. I love that title. So,
thank you.
So I want you to introduce us a little bit more to the Shekinah Clinic in Ghana. First of all, what does the name of the clinic mean?
Yes, the name is, it's a Hebrew word. Which is actually kind of strange and out of place for this part of the world because Ghana is a very religious country, but it's very Christian. And in the northern part of Ghana, it also is Islam and Christianity are about equal as far as participation numbers. But there's not a lot of Judaism there. So to see a Hebrew word is very unusual. So the name of the clinic, Shekinah, means, it basically means the physical manifestation of the divine. It can also mean home or dwelling. It's also has a feminine connotation. So what I think he uses it to mean in the titling the clinic with that is this comfortable place of home and nurturing and that feminine care that's associated with the word. I think it's a really beautiful name, and it also is very representative of his thoughts on religion in general. He's very inclusive. He labels himself as a Christian, and because he's traveled all over the world, he has come to realize that all these religions are essentially the same. And he also has a place for, like if you're a Muslim and you want to pray, he has a place for that in his clinic. And it's just a very inclusive, very loving place.
Right. Huh. It is really beautiful. I was quite surprised to see a little Hebrew there. It was interesting. So you've told us a little bit about what the clinic does, but kind of give us a little bit of a deeper sense of, you know, what's happening at the clinic on a day-to-day basis. Who else is involved in running it? You've mentioned the mobile meals program, but kind of give us like an overview of what you saw when you first arrived at the clinic.
Well, Dr. Abdullah himself is there all the time. And there are actually two locations that he divides his time between those two locations. His wife is the, her name is Doris. She's the one who runs the food program. But they have this very large team of volunteers. I guess it's not that large considering there's about 25, I guess, or 25 to 30 volunteers who work at the clinic on a daily basis, from doctors to nurses to people who clean and cook. And he also has people who come in from other countries, you know, doctors who volunteer their time at the clinic for a week a year and who kind of come in and out.
Oh, very interesting. And so what kinds of cases are they dealing with, the people that are coming to the clinic?
A lot of what you see there are curable diseases that have just become become worsened through the state of poverty and through neglect. So things that we would just, you know, take ibuprofen for here are very big problems there. And you mostly see that kind of thing. Malaria is still a problem there. Leprosy actually is, there's a leper colony that he attends to and feeds every day and cares for. HIV and AIDS, they are, there's an HIV ward right there in the clinic. I would say those are like the main people. And actually the mentally ill, the thing that really struck me about Dr. Abdullahi and his clinic was when we were there listening to him speak about his program, this woman walked up. And she was just, you know, saying this stream of words in Dagbani, which is the native language in northern Ghana. And so we had no idea what she was saying, but you could tell she was just sort of like talking and talking to no one. And he explained to us that she was schizophrenic. But she had this like big smile on her face. She was just so happy to be there. And he welcomed her up to sit right next to him while he talked to her and translated for us and talked to us and then talked to her. And was smiling and laughing, and she was smiling and laughing, and you could tell that he just loved her so much. And that is the essence of this story for me, is that he is compassionate and is not afraid to literally and figuratively embrace people that a lot of us would be afraid to approach, or maybe something, you know, people that we don't understand. That is what is so incredible about him and about this story.
Right, that is really powerful. And do you have a sense, either from the research that you've been doing over the last, couple of months, or from your experience in Ghana, sort of, you know, if that clinic wasn't there, what kind of care would the mentally ill or the leper colony, like, where else do people go?
As far as I understand, there isn't anywhere else. If you can't afford it, there are clinics available, but you have to pay a fee, like maybe US $10 probably is still prohibitive for a lot of people in the area. And if you can't afford that, you can't get healthcare. Mm-hmm. And so he's providing this amazing service, that, you know, I think they serve, I think it's on the website. It's something like 10,000 people a year that they serve. Through outpatient care and inpatient care. So it's quite a large number of people that they're reaching.
Wow, that is quite incredible. So you've also mentioned that the clinic has this mobile food program. Tell us a little bit about kind of what role that plays in the community, how it got started.
So the clinic was started about a year after the food program was started about a year after the clinic opened in 1990. So it's been around for quite a long time. And it's run by Dr. Abdullahi's wife, Doris, and her team of volunteers. All the food is cooked in the Abdullahi's home, their personal home. And as you can imagine, it's a lot of food that they have to cook for people. It's, you know,
yeah. How much food are we talking about here?
honestly, I'm not sure because I have yet to see it for myself. But there are some images on the website that I love. There's these huge aluminum pots that look like big cauldrons. And there's a woman with a giant wooden spoon, like a paddle, just like stirring this pot of kenke, which is, it's like a fermented corn dough that's very common. So it's a lot.
Okay. So What is that dish called? Kinke?
Kinke. Okay. It's K-E-N-K-E-Y. Okay.
So give us a little sense, like what's kind of a traditional dish in Ghana? Are there regional specialties for where the clinic is located or for that particular cultural or religious group that the clinic, that the mobile food program is serving?
Yeah. So typical Ghanaian food is some kind of ball or square of starch in a bowl, and it's surrounded by soup or stew of some kind, and then there's some kind of meat or fish that they put on top of that, and that's pretty much what they eat all the time, with some variations. That's the most common. The different starches are, like, it could be a rice ball, it could be fermented corn dough, it could be fufu, which is plantain and cassava mashed together in this gigantic mortar and pestle, which is, it's like this huge wooden mortar and pestle that requires two people to operate. So one person is sitting down, like crouching next to this wooden bowl, folding the dough over and over and over, and then a person holding the stick, pounding, pounding, pounding at every other fold. So what you get is this amazing rhythm of fold, pound, fold, pound, fold, pound, and it's so fast. They're so skilled. I could never do it. They made me, I was there and they had me hold the stick, hold the pestle, and I was scared. I was scared I was going to like smash her fingers.
Ruin the rhythm,
I didn't
right?
have the rhythm that they did. But she could have done it with her eyes closed. So, and so it smashed down so much that all the starches kind of blend together. It becomes this like sticky, soft dough that you pinch off, and you make a little bowl with your hand and scoop up the soup and maybe scoop up a little bit of your smoked fish or whatever's in there, and then you just eat the whole thing like that. And that's actually what's in the picture on my cover page and the Kickstarter page. If you go to Kickstarter, you'll see an image of what is light soup, or obunobunu is the Ghanaian name for it. But it's a tomato-based soup that they puree up, and in it is fufu. And what I was having at that particular time was wele, which is cow skin, and kako, which is like a square of very salty dried fish, and then a piece of smoked fish in there as well.
Oh wow, that sounds delicious! Oh my goodness. So where, you know, the clinic is making these meals? Is this a daily meal?
Yes, every 7 days a week, every single day, but only one meal a day is what they're giving people, because they're feeding 200 people. So it's, you know, in one truck, it's, you know, a lot to do. So they make sure that it's a substantial meal.
Right. And so where is that food coming from? Is there farmers are growing near the clinic? Or kind of how do they source that?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that yet. That's definitely on the docket of things to ask and look for. We did, while I was in Ghana last year, we did visit several farms in that area. But I don't know so much about the exact supply chains. My guess is that they go to Tamale Market. So each city in Ghana has a large marketplace, bustling, busy, crowded, loud, very fun places. I love the markets. And that's where most people go and buy their food. And sometimes you'll see prepared banku or fufu or, you know, whatever. But, you know, there's like stacks of smoked fish just like sitting on tables and, you know, huge tables of scotch bonnet peppers, which are in almost everything there, and lots of tomatoes. And that's, they probably go to the market to pick up those things and bring them back.
Right. Okay. And, you know, when I think about like a Meals on Wheels kind of program here, oftentimes I think of like a boxed meal. And I'm wondering, you know, have you been on the route yet where you have a sense of kind of how it's packaged? Is it hot? You know, are they sitting down and having a meal with people, or is it more of a drop and move to the next?
I have not been on the route, but from what I understand, it's a drop off situation. And as far as packaging goes, there's not a lot of takeout packaging in Ghana in general.
Right.
What they use is actually just plastic bags, they look like little tiny plastic garbage bags, or like, you know, little bags that you might, you know, buy your beer in or something like that here at the bodega. Little black or clear bags that are then filled with liquid. So you might buy your tea in a plastic bag or coconut water, fresh coconut water on the street in a plastic bag, and drink it out of the bag by biting off the bottom corner and just kind of basically sucking it out of the bag. So that is most likely what they are using, is plastic bags to put their food in to deliver it. And I think I saw a photo of the meal program where they had the pots in the back of the truck covered for movement. So they're probably dishing it out at each location into the plastic bags and then handing it to the person.
Right. Oh, well, I really look forward to seeing that footage of you ripping off the little bag edge and drinking your soup or drinking your tea.
That's how you get water there, too. Water comes in little sachets, little packets like that you rip and drink.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, well, Katrina, all of this sounds just fascinating. I'm really excited to kind of see what comes next. But before we go, what does the title of your documentary mean?
Oh, where did you pick that imagery? We haven't talked about that yet. So Under the Mango Tree is very significant for this place. Dr. Abdullahi, when he first went up to Tamale, he had no buildings at all. And he performed his first emergency surgery up there under this mango tree. And it's still there today. And it's now an area of restoration where people can go and they can rest in the shade and heal after their surgery. And so it's very central place in the clinic.
Oh, fantastic. Mm-hmm. That is a really, really beautiful, really powerful story. So again, Katrina, please tell our listeners how they can find out more about your documentary, how they can support your project.
Yes, you can go to kickstarter.com and search Under the Mango Tree. And then on the right side, you'll see a list of pledges, and you know, you can get a bunch of fun rewards. I have things like a tote bag that we're going to have made for you from the beautiful West African fabric that has all those colors and prints. So find something you like on there and click on it, and then you can contribute to the project.
Okay, and when does the campaign end? How quickly do people need to get there?
April 27th is the last day, but earlier is better, because if you get
Don't make her worry. Let her relax.
Yes, please. But also, if we make our goal early, we are looking at increasing our goal and adding some more stuff. So,
oh, that is fantastic. Well, Katrina, thank you so very much for coming in today to talk about your upcoming documentary, Under the Mango Tree, Food, Health, and Love in Ghana. We wish you luck with the remainder of your Kickstarter campaign. You are off to a great start. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Well, I'm Leah Eden, and I've been your host this beautiful evening. This has been another special recording on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. If you miss even a moment of tonight's conversation, it's available free on our website, like all of our 30 live weekly shows at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can also check out our shows on iTunes or Stitcher. If you like what you hear, want to support us, click that donate tab and become a member today. Thank you so much for listening, and keep coming back.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.